We've been doing last week, this week, the discussion of Bar Masa Achrita and Bar Masa Didei, the distinctions in halacha between two competitors who are from the same city versus the case of a competitor from another city who wants to open a business in a city where he does not reside. The latter case is Aser, the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says, only if he's Bar Masa Didei, then it's okay. And then there's the whole discussion of Karga, that if the resident of the other city pays karga to the local authorities, then that's a heter. So the question is, how do we apply this? How would we apply this in the United States? How do we apply this in modern countries? There's federal government, federal jurisdiction, state, local, municipal.
Are you getting involved in the bar mitzvah issue, or are you not getting involved in
the Not really. I'm not bar mitzvah. That's in a separate question. I'm discussing just the general question of how do we define bar masa? How do we apply? How do we define bar masa achrita, member of another city? And how do we define karga? And in general, how does this iser against a resident of another city competing locally? How is that applied, practically speaking, in let's say in the United States? So we're not really able to treat this topic fully. It's a broad topic, and there's a tremendous amount that's been written on it. In this modest presentation, I'm just going to discuss a case study where I think most of the important principles are developed. That was the discussion that we find in the 16th century under the Ottoman Empire. And as we learn Chazal Mishpat, anyone who sticks with this will note that the Sfardim in the Ottoman period from the 16th century, basically from post-exile, from the refugees from Spain, Portugal, who mostly settled in Turkish countries, for hundreds of years, 16th century, 17th century, 18th century, had a magnificent tradition, particularly in Chazal Mishpat. Most of the interesting Chazal Mishpat work are done by this tradition of Sephardic Poskim, beginning from the Beis Yosef and his colleagues and running down for centuries. Famous people like the Mishle Melech and the Machne Ephraim, less famous people perhaps like the Mishpat Tzedek, Rabbi Yonah Navon, and so on. So the basic questions of how we apply the rules of Bar Masa Achrita and how we apply the concept of karga were first treated systematically, seriously, by the poskim of the 16th century, the Sfardim. So the Ottoman Empire was, I don't know that much about the exact history, but basically it was a large, broad empire. It controlled what we know of today as Turkey. That was really the heyday, the 15th century, the 16th century. That was really its heyday. They controlled what we know of today as Turkey, Greece, North Africa, Egypt, Eretz Israel, parts of the Near East, and there was, to some extent, there was a unified hegemony of Ottoman control over all these countries, even though they were, to some extent, separate countries, separate traditions, but they were all unified under the political control of the Ottoman Empire. And the empire, in particular, was known to be a very pro-commerce, free trade. They were corrupt in many ways, and it wasn't, in some way, it was not in the sense of an enlightened liberal government, but in terms of trade, they were very pro-business, pro-trade. They encouraged free travel, apparently, from the Chuvas among the different provinces, different countries, different cities. So we find numerous, probably dozens of Turkish poskim discussing the question of how do we apply these halachas of Bar Masa Achrita and Yoav Karga to businessmen from different cities, different countries within the empire, or even outside the empire, to how do we apply these halachas? So we find three or four different positions, three major positions. The most lenient, the most, the strongest supporter of the view that the Gemara's halachas cannot be applied at all the way they appear to Ottoman Turkey was the Marashdam, Rav Shmuel di Medina, one of the great poskim of Salonika, a city which I'd probably have barely heard of before I started learning Chazal Mishpat, but when you learn Chazal Mishpat, you see the list of great poskim who operate out of Salonika. Marashdam was one of them. Rashdam has at least four tshuvas, which I copied here, and he has several others, I think, in all of which he pretty strongly takes the view that there is, in general, no prohibition for a Jew from one city to operate in another city within the empire, and even from a Jew from outside the empire, there is generally no prohibition to come into an Ottoman city and operate. And in each tshuva, he gives various reasons, but basically he has at least three.
What do you mean?
To run a business, to compete against local, to operate commercially and compete against the local businessmen. So he gives different reasons, different language in each of the tshuvas, but he has basically at least three more or less distinct reasons. And two of them are based on comments in the Rishonim, which we'll touch on this week. One of them is a brief comment of the Ramah, Rene Halevi Abu Lafia, brought by the Tur. The Ramah says that these halachas, where we're allowed to stop somebody from outside the city, and so on, dafka deleka goyim demizavni, when this is in an industry which is tightly controlled, and there are no non-Jewish vendors, there are no non-Jewish players in this game, avli ika goyim demizavni, if there are non-Jews, lo, then you have no right to object to the Jews. Because then the people you're protecting, the incumbent local businessmen you're trying to protect by blocking others, will not benefit. He's talking about a slightly different case, but the basic idea is that the people you're trying to protect will not stand to benefit from by your blocking the Jewish competitors, because there are other competitors involved. You can't stop them. They're not going to listen to us. So therefore, there's no point in stopping the Jewish competitors either, and some of the sources I assigned this week, you'll see more about the discussion of how that was understood by the Poskim. One other source, that widely quoted by the Rashbam and others in this context, is a tshuva of the Chazi HaTnufa. That was a medieval work, collection of tshuvas of different Rishonim. He says, describing a case that sounds very much like the Ottoman Empire, he says, Uva'aret shekulam l'sar echad, in a region where everyone is under one tsar, one governor, one government, shekulam parim lamas, he collects all the taxes, that's all under the same tax jurisdiction, hamut l'aleim, b'nei arachas, yichol mas iska b'aracheres, members of one city, residents of one city are allowed to do business in another city, afal pi she'enam darim sham, since they're all under the same tax jurisdiction. So the Marashtam and his various tshuvas, two of his svaras are taken straight from these two rishon. One svara, he says repeatedly, is that in the Ottoman Empire, everyone pays taxes to the same Ottoman government, even though they all live under local governors and local provinces and, you know, some kind of hierarchy of government, but ultimately all power flows from the central government, all taxes are paid to the central government. And the truth is, Mabit, who has a tshuva where he discusses, he takes a similar view to the Marashtam, he points out that even though there were some taxes that were indeed paid to local authorities, they were like we have today, we have state, we have local taxes, there were some taxes that were paid to the local authorities, that doesn't make a difference, he says. The primary taxes, the main taxes, were paid to the central government, and that is sufficient. Now, you have to read carefully and see how we decide which are the primary taxes. Is it a question of magnitude? Is it a question of, do we look at the type of tax, how it was assessed on income, on assets, on business? But nevertheless, the just broadly speaking, the fact that some taxes may be paid locally doesn't take away from the fact that if the main tax is paid to the central government, then he agrees with the Marashtam that that's called we're all erachas. That wouldn't justify people coming from outside the empire to compete, but at least anyone within the empire would have the right to compete with anyone else in any other city, even though he doesn't live in that city. And that's based on the Chazi HaTnufa. Second line of reasoning they bring is the Ramah. The Ramah says anytime we can't block the non-Jewish competitors from competing, there's no point in blocking the Jewish competitors either. Marashtam repeatedly uses the phrase Loksa Midas Hadin. It wouldn't be fair. Why should we stop just the Jews if we can't stop the non-Jews? And he therefore says that itself is a reason that Lomati Loksa Midas Hadin Al Yisrael. We can't stop the Tugarmim, we can't stop the other non-Jews, the Turks, or anybody else. So there's no point in trying to block just the Jews since we aren't really accomplishing anything. Because anyway, there'll be a robust market with numerous players, so stopping one or two more competitors is really not a big deal.
That sounds like two different spheres. One sphere sounds like Loksa Midas Hadin, the other sphere sounds like you're not accomplishing anything.
That's a good point. Loksa Midas Hadin just sounds like a fairness argument.
Why should
the non-Jew?
If you have 8 business members, 12 businessmen, the 8 businessmen can really benefit from only having 8. But that's Loksa Midas Hadin because you're only stopping the Jewish ones. The other one sounds like
that's an interesting point.
Not accomplishing anything, but I don't know if that's true. I mean, if you only have 8 businessmen, that could be far more profitable than having 12 businessmen.
No, those are good points. I can see that. I have to read the text a little more carefully and see. He definitely says Loksa Midas Hadin several times in several tshuvas, and I think he says the other svar too, but I would have to check. A little more carefully. Third argument he makes is that this, and he explicitly allows even competitors from outside the country because of this, from outside the empire entirely, is that the entire, he says, theoretically speaking, what's the rationale for this whole concept of Karga and of Masach Rita? He says, because he brings language of the Rishonim, that this is all based on the idea of Dina Malchus Adina. that the government has the right to declare that operating commercially here, running a business, is a privilege, and the privilege is reserved, restricted to those who pay taxes. And the governments themselves didn't allow just anyone to come in and run a business. This is a tightly controlled protectionist society in the time of Chazal. The local governments, the independent city-states, all had their rules. If you don't pay taxes to us, you don't have the right to do business in my town. The empire, he says, which was not protectionist in that way, it was very much a laissez-faire government. It was free for anybody who wanted to. He says, the government says, Kein das amelech, that today, he says, that the government says, Ir prutza l'chol, those who pay taxes, those who don't pay taxes, he says, anyone can come, anyone can go, Ein malcha biyadam. So he says, there's no such thing. There, for sure, he says, the entire concept of Barmas Achrita does not apply. And that's what he says explicitly in a couple of tshuvas, that even people who come from another government, not just the local Ottoman residents, are allowed to compete freely anywhere in the Ottoman Empire. Now, this is all the most lenient position, that the competition is free anywhere in the Ottoman Empire, regardless of where you want to come from, because that's the law. If you're lucky, meet a din. Possibly because it won't accomplish anything. We anyway won't accomplish anything by blocking you, and because you're and within the empire you have the additional svara that you're all paying taxes to the same government, at least some of the taxes, the major taxes. There were posts who disagree. Most notably, Rav Shmuel Kili in the Mishpatei Shmuel, a contemporary basically, he argued vehemently that the halachas do apply in the Ottoman Empire. That the Chazi Atnuf in particular, who says that if the central government is one, even though there are different cities, Halacha doesn't apply as a das yachid, he said. We don't paskin like that. None of the posts can bring it down, he says. It's not accepted. And we have in the Lechem Rav, the Tshuvas of the Lechem Mishnah, also a contemporary. He was actually a student of the Marashtam, so I am not quite sure why he doesn't cite the treatments of his own teacher. But we have a Tshuva of the Lechem Rav where he also rejects being lenient based on this sort of argument of the Marashtam. And he says, because He in principle agrees that if there was a central government that levied taxes equally and uniformly across cities, if the taxes were assessed on a personal income, irrespective of anything else, that would be fine. We would not distinguish between cities. However, he says, the way the taxes typically were assessed were that the government would tell the community, you owe us $10,000, and the government would make, and then the community would have the job of dividing that bill among the members within the city. And he says that the government would decide how much to bill based on how much business was done in the city. And since a merchant from outside town who would come into town and start doing business, his assets would add to the local tax bill, he says, therefore, the community has the right to either block him or either to charge him extra taxes for the privilege of operating, because he does have an effect on the taxes, even if ultimately there is one government, the tax is somewhat local, the way the taxes were assessed, and therefore, so, you know, the argument is fairly technical, but in general, the point is he did feel that in the Ottoman Empire, the halachas did still apply, although, again, what he says may not be applicable to the United States, but at least in the specific case of the Ottoman Empire, he did feel that the halachas did still apply, and the Chikri Lev and other Sfaradim have explored this much further and have said, there are many poskim who said that the halachas did still apply in the Ottoman Empire, and So in general, this is sort of a case study. Not everything that was said here can be applied directly to the modern United States, but this analysis of how to apply the halachas of Karga and Bar Masa Achrita to a political and economic system that was very different from the Gemara and more modern in certain ways is really the foundation of any discussion of this question of how to apply the Gemara's halachas to a modern economy. And I know this has not been a fully satisfying halacha l'maisa treatment, but this is at least the foundation. Perhaps on a later date we can develop this more fully.